This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
With Derek Miller and his son Jake Miller, and they're going to tell us about their nonprofit, Play to Beat Brain Cancer. So tell me about it.
This is Derek. What we do is we fundraise through tabletop gaming, and the money that we raise through that, a small percentage goes to research, but most of it goes to help pay medical debt for people that need the help due to brain cancer, because we want to remove that stress from the person or the family, so that they don't have to worry about it, so they can worry about getting better.
That's real cool. And Jake, how long have you been doing this with your dad?
For about 2 years now. We started off going to small cons, and we've eventually gotten to go to bigger cons like Origins and PAX South and stuff like that. So we're taking steps in the right direction because we want to be able to help as many people as we can. So.
That's pretty cool. So explain what you're doing here at Origin.
Basically, we're just here trying to raise funds, like Derek said earlier, and we're just trying to have as much fun while raising money for people and trying to help people out. So
it's cool. So if my listeners want to help out in any way with Playing to Beat Brain Cancer, where can they find you?
Well, our website, ptbbc.org, will also list all the conventions that we're going to be at, because we go to about two or three conventions a month, and then they can find us there, or we do some online streaming through Twitch as well, for people playing games and things like that. But I mean, usually conventions are the biggest place to find us.
All right, awesome. Jake, what's it like doing this with your dad?
It's a lot of fun,
That's not what you said off mic.
he's cool, I guess. It's all right. But yeah, it's a lot of fun just hanging out with my old man and doing what I really enjoy doing, which is helping people and gaming and all that stuff. So.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much, for both of you, for your time, and I'll let you get back to doing your fundraising.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm here with Brandon from Blue Orange, and he's going to tell us about one of their games, Once Upon a Castle. Now, I know it's a roll and write intended more or less for kids. That's about all I know, so can you tell me about it?
Sure, yeah, you're right. It's a roll and write where we are drawing our own castle. Basically, on your turn, you're going to roll these two dice, and on them are different resources, either food or wood or coins or stone or a wild. You can also get people living in your castle. And basically, you're going to need all these things to build your castle. When you roll them, if it's your turn, you get both the resources you rolled. So let's say you roll food and wood. You get to place a marker onto your player board to signify that you have those resources. And this player board is sort of a checkered thing with resources in three rows and several columns. When you complete a column or a row so that all the resources are covered, you get to draw the item depicted on either side of that row or column. So this can be walls for your castle, this can be pillars for your castle, this can be tapestries that will score points. This can also be the tower dungeon or more people. So basically, you roll the dice, you put your two markers down. Everybody else also gets to choose one of the markers to place on their own player board, helping them build their own castle. Basically, our goal is to build our castle. Everything will score points, like the towers will score points, the tapestries you draw in the castle will score points. We'll also score you more points to finish first. We also, one of the things people like about this game is if you flip over your sheet that you're drawing your castle on, is a free draw. So there's one side that has an outline of a castle, and all you need to do is trace it when you draw it.
Trace it or kind of fill them in.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the other side, you can draw whatever you want to. It still tells you need four towers, four walls, and a tower and a dungeon that is four levels in height. But you get to draw it yourself, so some free creativity there. When one player has finished their castle completely, then all the other players, including them, are going to add up their points from the tapestries and the towers and bonuses for completing first.
That sounds really cool. I really like the take on having a roll and write, but it's not just, you know, oh, take this thing and then figure out where to put it.
Yeah.
But rather kind of giving you a little bit more freedom with tokens that you're not always locked in right away.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And it's got the cute theme of drawing your own castle is also nice too.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Very kid friendly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about Panic Island? That's one of your newest ones, right?
Yeah, Panic Island is actually a cooperative party game version of the classic children's game Memory Match. It's scenario driven, but the basic underlying play pattern is the cards are all face down, and on your turn you're going to flip two face up, and if they match, yay, you did the thing, and then the next player takes their turn. And if they don't match, you just put them back down, and the next player takes their turn. We only have 2 minutes to match as much as possible in this game. It's always a 5x5 grid, and there's always a volcano somewhere in there. To begin the game, we show everybody where the volcano is. If they ever reveal it, the game is immediately over and you lost. So you got it. That's the first thing you got to remember. Now, another way this is different from classic Memory Match games is it's not a simple matter of matching the same item.
So you're not actually making straight pairs of things?
Right, correct. The whole theme of this is the volcano is exploding on our island, and we need to get as much life as possible off of it. We need to save the humans, we need to save the dodos, and we need to save their eggs. So, if we flip up a human and a dodo of the same color, the human will save that dodo. Similarly, if we flip up a dodo and an egg of the same color, the dodo will flip that egg. So there's a little bit of importance to match the dodos with the eggs first, because if you save all the dodos before the dodos save their own eggs, those eggs are in jeopardy.
Okay.
Now, the only way to save the humans is to call upon the god of the island. I believe his name is Guga. At one point during the game, once you have a basic sense of where all the cards are, you can call Guga, and the way that works, and instead of on your turn flipping up two cards, you simply predict which card you will flip up, like human. And if you then flip up a human, then everything is good, and the next player continues this guessing game, and they can flip up correctly. So if I guess human and flip up human, then the next player can guess dodo and flip up dodo. As soon as they guess incorrectly, we go back to the basic play pattern of flipping up two cards.
Okay.
So we're doing this all in 2 minutes. We also need to, just like we can't flip up the volcano, we need to match the ore and the raft together to score any points at all. Because if we don't, then we're still on the island and we can't get off.
We're gathered in a little huddle on the beach.
Yeah,
and we're still
going
to die.
Watching the lava consume us. Now, the other thing that's going on in here is, and this is where the scenario aspect comes in. There are these different action cards, and in the basic scenario, there are three of them. One of them looks like a little hive, and it has a symbol of hands on top of each other. If any player flips up that card, before they do anything else, all players must do a hand stack on top of it, where they stack their hands on. Once they've done that, they can release, and they can flip up the next card. Another card we have is swap the position of that card with the other card you reveal. And another card is get up out of your seat, spin around in a circle, and sit back down. So as we progress through the scenarios, they'll become crazier and crazier and more difficult and more distracting, but also more fun. So at the end of 2 minutes, if you haven't blown up with the volcano and you've found the ore and the paddle, then you're going to consult the rules to see how many humans and how many birds and how many eggs you saved, and then get a point value. Once you've completed enough scenarios, you'll unlock the final scenario and win the game.
That sounds really cool. I have a couple of kids who are real good at memory games, and I would love to make it cooperative instead of competitive.
Yes, I absolutely love this aspect. We've played this a lot at a few different shows together as a company, and I really enjoy it. I think it's a clever twist.
Well, that's fantastic. You've got lots of other great games that you're showing here at Origins, but those were the two I was the most interested in. Thank you very much for your time, Brandon.
Thank you.
It's still the first Day of Origins, and I'm here with Jondi Soper from Mayday Games. She's going to tell us about one of their games they're selling here this weekend called Isle of Monsters.
So Isle of Monsters is a entry-level deck building and drafting game that's really great to teach younger players how to learn those types of mechanics. You are basically, you're on an island, and you don't want all the other people on the island with you. You want it to be your island. So you're going to capture these monsters and make them your friends.
Aww.
By maturing them. And because they're not really that scary. They're really cute, but you want them to pretend to be scary.
Okay.
So you're going to capture these monsters, you're going to feed them, and then you're going to pit them against the other monsters in the annual Scare Fest. So nobody's like, they're not fighting, they're just trying to scare each other.
Okay. Good.
And so you're competing to get scare points. You're trying to scare both the audience and the other players' monsters to earn scare points and win the game.
All right. And so you were telling me earlier that you are kind of drafting them out of the decks.
Yes.
Near
yes.
your island, you can't draft them from the other deck?
Yes. So the player boards, there's different setups for each number of players, but there will always be several different islands, like outlying islands, and you can only draft monsters from the islands that are on either side of your player board. So if the island is not like directly next to you, you can't get those monsters because they're too far away.
Sure.
And then the food is that you draft food the same way to feed your monsters, and the food has to come from the islands on either side of you or the main island in the center of the game.
Okay, cool. So you draft monsters, put them in the cages on your island.
Uh-huh.
And then feed them food to mature them, and once they're mature, they can go in your hand.
Uh-huh. And it's you get to use the ones in your hand, the mature monsters. You use them every round. Like, you use them, they go into a discard pile, and then you pick that discard pile right back up and use them in the next round. So you're not like losing any of you don't go, "Oh, I want to use these ones this turn and save these ones for next turn." You can use all of your monsters in each scare phase.
Okay, cool. Well, this sounds like an awesome entry-level deck building sort of experience, and you mentioned that the monsters, when they do try to scare each other, work off kind of a rock, paper, scissors
yes.
mechanic.
So they're all like elements, like element monsters. So there's fire monsters, and there's water monsters, and there's earth monsters. So it's rock, paper, scissors, or even kind of Pokemon style in the fact that water beats fire.
Okay.
Fire beats earth, and earth beats water.
Excellent.
And nobody has to remember that, because the cards very clearly will show you what kind of element can beat them.
Okay.
So you don't have to try to remember all that.
Very neat.
Yeah. I really like this game. It's great. And it's a great family game.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Jondi.
Thank you.
Sean Fletch,
yep.
Who was one of the designers of Die Hard, the Nakatomi Heist board game. Fletch, this game is awesome.
Well, thank you.
Tell our listeners about how it works.
Okay, so when we designed this game, we wanted to make something that really captured the flavor of the movie. So imagine we took a sponge, dipped it in the movie, and then squeezed it out on top of the board. It's a one versus many game where John McClane is playing versus a group of thieves hired by Hans Gruber to pick six locks in the Nakatomi building and then blow up the roof as part of their plan. John McClane is trying to rescue hostages and push Hans Gruber out the window on the 32nd floor, I think. John wins the game by killing Hans Gruber. The thieves win the game by either unlocking all of the locks or by killing John McClane while he's on his way to the top floor.
Yeah, I love the fact that it plays out in three acts, and with each act, the board unfolds to show different parts of the Nakatomi Tower.
Yeah, it's tough to see on a verbal podcast, but the board starts completely folded so that only one panel of the quad fold is visible for Act 1. It opens like a book to show two panels for Act 2, and then it opens again to show all four panels for Act 3. So the board actually gets larger, the play space gets larger as the game goes on.
And John McClane's abilities also get better as the game goes on, but it's very dependent on what you played earlier on, right?
Yeah, we used a mechanic where there's a separate deck for Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3 for John McClane. And whenever he plays a card in any given act, it carries over into the next act's deck with better actions on it. So the cards will both improve and give you more opportunities to take actions in the subsequent rounds.
Well, the game sounds great. It's got a great table presence. The figures and most of the cards are all red and green and black and white.
Oh, we knew we were playing into the idea that, people call it the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
I definitely think selling it as, you know, this is Christmas all year round with Die Hard the Board Game is the way to go.
Well, it's going to be out in July, so it's Christmas in July. That works nicely.
Perfect.
It's going to retail for $39.99.
Oh, that's well worth it. Listeners, if your family enjoys Die Hard as a family Christmas movie, as my husband and I do, and hopefully someday our kids, you should definitely look into Die Hard, the Nakatomi Heist board game.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for your time.
No problem.
I'm here at Origins with Chris Gould from Watzel Pogue Games. And Chris, please tell me about your game, Echidna Shuffle. I played it, and I think our audience would love it.
Oh, it's an easy-to-learn family game. It's pick up and deliver. There are 12 echidnas on the board, which are these small plastic figurines. Very cute.
Very cute.
And everybody has three bugs in their own color, and all the colors are different. So if you're red, you're the ladybugs. If you're orange, you're the butterflies. And three stumps. You put your pickup marker on one of the leaves. You pass your stumps to the player on your left. And then you roll, who puts them on the board in difficult locations. And then you roll the dice and go. The echidnas move on to your pickup space and the bug jumps on their back. And you just have to get it to the stump. The first player to deliver all three of their bugs wins the game. Just that easy.
You say that, but the board is like all these interlocking circles and the board is full of echidnas and you're not allowed to jump anybody.
That's right. Yes, you have to move. It's like a traffic jam and everything is one way. So you have to go in that direction, but you have to move the other echidnas out of your way. So you have to use your moves to move other people's echidnas all over the board, which may help them. It may hurt them. You never know.
That's the basics of the game. It's super cute. It plays up to six players. And honestly, I could see my younger kids in particular just playing with the echidnas, even if they don't feel like playing the game. Where can people find Echidna Shuffle to buy it?
Well, right now we're trying to get it into as many local stores as possible, but if you can't find it, you go to our website. That's www.watzelpogue.com.
All right, we'll put a link to it.
You'll put a link to it. Good idea. And if you have a retail store, please contact us, same address, and we'll see if we can get some directly into your store.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Chris.
Thank you for coming.
Marino, the designer of a game called Gem Hens, which is published by Social Sloth. So, Pat, tell me about your game.
Sure. This is a game that my older brother Jim and I designed together. It actually started as a joke with a theme. We're joking about Fabergé eggs, the famous jeweled eggs, and what would happen if chickens actually laid those eggs. And that turned into Gem Hens, which is a sort of a family-friendly set collection game where you are a chicken trying to eat this jeweled feed in order to lay one of these jeweled eggs.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about how the game plays.
Sure. So it's 2 to 4 players, and there is a grid board that is the sort of yard where the chickens are. And each round starts with a farmer throwing some grain, which are little gems, out onto the grass. And then the chickens come out of the coop, and they use dice that they've rolled to do different actions. So ones, twos, and threes let a player move their chicken. Fours and fives let them signal to the farmer to throw more feed.
Okay.
And then sixes are wilds that are first used for pecking order. So a six that you rolled lets you vie for a chance to go first, and then those dice also become other actions after they're re-rolled. So as you're moving around the board, every time you stop on a piece of this jeweled feed, you get to eat it and then add it to your egg board, which has different facets in it, where you're slotting into either pairs, three of a kind, four of a kind, or five of a kind to make those sets. And some of the gems are worth more points, so you're trying to build the most valuable egg you can over three rounds.
Well, I just finished a game of it. It's really fun. It's cool. It's definitely a unique take on sort of a dice placement with a little bit of speed rolling and then a lot of strategy about where to move and who to push out of the way and when to ask for more feed.
Yeah, we wanted to have a rule set that was easy to teach very quickly, that you roll these dice. You have 20 seconds to sort of complete your roll and assign them to your board. And then the actions are very simple, but then there's layers of strategy there. So if a family's playing, the kids can jump into it pretty quickly and understand the basic rules. But a group of gamers playing it can dive a little bit deeper into the strategy. And then for that level of gamer, there are actually some cards that I see weren't in this demo, because it's sort of like once you've learned the game,
sure,
you get these special powers. So you can take on the role of the forger chicken who can fake some things in their gem, and then there's a tough chicken that's better at shoving other chickens out of the way. So you get these different ways to play and different strategies you can exploit.
It's very cool. You all should look for this game, Gem Hens, published by Social Sloth. And thank you very much for your time, Pat.
My pleasure.
I'm here with Ken from Intex Entertainment, and he's going to tell us about two of the games they have on display for kids.
Sure. So thanks for letting me do this. King of the Castle is the first game. In King of the Castle, there are four decks of cards, and so you're playing with two to four players. And each deck of card is designated by color. There's a red deck, a green deck, a blue deck, and a yellow deck. And in that deck of cards are your knights. They're your army. The knights are numbered 1 through 5. And your goal is to race your knights up a castle wall and to get them to the top of the castle. Whoever at the end of the game has the most points at the top of the castle would win the game. And so you do that by moving your knights based on the number that's on the card. So, for example, if you draw the number 2 knight, then that knight could move into the second space on the castle wall. On its next turn, you could either choose to draw another card and place it on the castle wall, or you can move that number 2 knight up in increments of 2. So, an example, it would go 2, 4, 6, 8, and on the last turn, it would be able to jump into the top of the castle. The fun little part of the game, though, is when you land on either your own or an opponent's knight, because you get to take them off the castle wall, drop them into the middle of the castle tower, down into the dungeon where they're lost for the rest of the game. So it's a simple game of math and strategy where you're trying to race up the castle wall. So it's fun for kids, educational element to it, but also a little cutthroat so adults can have fun as well.
Yeah, I like that it's a little cutthroat, but it's all small numbers and simple math and would make sense to probably my 5-year-old, although he'd need a little help with the math involved.
Yeah, it's actually age graded 3 and up, so you do need to help some of the younger kids, because you're right, the numbers are small enough that they can do it on their fingers if they need to.
Yeah.
But it is fun. We take it to game nights and adults sit there and yell at each other and have fun playing as well. So it's great for kids and adults both.
All right. And the other game that you're showing that's a good game for families and kids is Pirates Plunder. Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, Pirates Plunder is fun for me because my brother and I both invented it. So it's a game where we're a bunch of pirates, and we took over a merchant ship, and somewhere one of us, for some reason, was not thinking and accidentally lit a fire in the powder keg room. And so eventually the ship's going to explode. Yeah, uh-oh. But like a bunch of pirates, we want to run around and grab as much treasure as we possibly can, or booty, if you like to say it that way. And so on the cards that you'll see, there are coins. Most of the cards have coins on them. You're trying to accumulate those coins because at the end of the round, you want to have as much treasure as possible. But somewhere in that deck of cards is an explosion card. And so at any given moment, we don't know where it's at. It's shuffled in there at random. And so at any given moment, one of us could reveal the explosion card. And at that point, your treasure's lost. And so during the course of the game, at any given moment, doesn't have to be your turn, it can be anybody's turn, you can say, I jump overboard. And so all the treasure you've accumulated in that round, if you jump overboard, is safe no matter who draws the explosion
card at
the end.
No matter what else happens.
Right,
sure.
Right. But anyone who's left overboard and continues to play If they've not jumped overboard, then all the cards they've accumulated to that point in the round are lost because the explosion happened and they're lost at sea. There's also wild cards filtered into the deck that let you do little nefarious deeds like steal from your opponent or push them overboard, things that let you be safe for a couple draws. But ultimately, at the end of the round, you look at your cards, if you're safe, you look at your cards, you total up the coins, and then you divvy out the actual little gold doubloons that come with it and that are in a treasure chest, and you play until the treasure chest is empty. You play, keep playing multiple rounds until the treasure chest is empty, and you're the master pirate.
That's great. It's a little bit cutthroat, but a lot of just press your luck, and the toy factor on this one's pretty high. I like it a lot.
Yeah, including the little treasure chest and the coins does have a cool toy factor, so it keeps kids engaged because I love the feel of the coins bouncing around in their hands and makes them feel a bit like pirates because, you know, what pirates don't get excited when they have coins in their hands.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Ken.
No problem. Yeah, thanks for your time.
Billy Chandler from Luma Games, and he's going to tell us about their new game, Draftosaurus.
So Draftosaurus is a new drafting game where you're drafting and then placing dinosaurs into your own individual parks. It's a really cool game that allows you to choose from, instead of a hand of cards, a hand of cute little dinosaur meeples.
They're adorable.
They're just so wonderful. And then place them onto your board while getting all that fun drafting that you love from other games like Sushi Go and Seven Wonders. It's designed by a really strong team that includes Antoine Bauza and Ludovic Maublanc. Mm-hmm. So they know how to make some good drafting games. It's really good for kind of all ages because it gives you a really simple objective: draft some dinosaurs, score some points, place them on your board. Mm-hmm. I've been successfully teaching it with young kids throughout the duration of the con so far, and also just anyone who loves a quick little 15-minute game. It also has a slightly more involved side of the board where if you want things to be a little bit more complicated,
nice.
You can make it a little bit more complicated. And there's not a ton of player interaction, so it is pretty easy to help guide new kids as they're figuring out what they're doing and how to do it.
So I would say if your kids can understand Sushi Go, they can certainly understand Draftosaurus.
Absolutely. And when some kids get distracted, I know that, and when they get distracted, they have the toys to play with. They have these cute little dinosaur meeples to move around the table and dance with.
I will say, it's a pretty quick moving game, though.
I've
played it a couple of times now, and I don't think it's ever taken more than 15 minutes, including explaining the rules.
Yeah,
so it's
easy to get it out. It takes a little bit longer if you go
on the more complicated
side, and it takes a little bit longer with two players, since you also add like a two-player variant, but it's really quick and really solid.
So that's Draftosaurus. It plays from 2 to 5 players?
2 to 5.
And yeah, we said about 15 minutes. When is it going to be available in retail?
I believe coming up like this summer it's going to be available in retail.
So in a month or so.
Yeah, and we've sold a few copies at the con here.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I hope we can show more people how awesome Draftosaurus is.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Origins with Ross Thompson from The Op, and he's going to tell us about Dungeon Academy.
Yeah, we just finished playing through Dungeon Academy, and yeah, your barbarian almost beat me.
Almost.
It was super good. So Dungeon Academy is a 1-6 player roll and write game where you're playing adventurers at a Dungeon Academy, learning how to be the best adventurers that you can be. And so there's dice that are in the cool little dice pool, and we reveal those each time. There's going to be little bad guys and big bad guys and potions and all the things that you can do. And you've got to race against the clock and other players to essentially move around and make sure that you can get the most points while also making sure you have enough life to go to the next couple dungeons.
So the dice end up falling in this little 4x4 grid in this super cool cardboard dungeon that comes in the game.
Yeah, it's got a really good aesthetic. It pops out. It's very fun with the whole reveal each time. And it's got a good feel to it. And as you're going through on the 4x4 grid, you've got to make sure that all pops out.
Yeah. So what else can you tell us about the game? There's lots of different characters you can choose from.
Oh, yeah. There's over, I think there's 13 characters in the game. And you got them from, like, barbarians to warriors to pirates to monks to wizards. They've all got different abilities they can do. Some help you defeat bigger monsters. Some give you bonuses where they can change up potions and do all kinds of things, which is really cool. And then along with that, you've got a lot of items that you can pick from, too. And so after each game, that depending on the initiative order you get first pick on items. And there's from potions to helmets.
To, shall we say, cursed items that people in front of you might have left behind.
Yeah, like the cursed glasses, right?
Yeah.
So they're a little 3D, but it's hard to walk around that in the daylight, right? And so you've got, they can change up your blue to reds, which is kind of crazy if you're trying to think really quick.
Yeah, so the whole point of this game is that the dungeon layout is revealed to everybody simultaneously, and then you're all racing to draw your own path that you would like to take through the dungeon.
That's right.
Yeah.
And as you're doing it, what's kind of cool is the perspective of the dungeon also changes depending on how you're looking at it, too. So even though we have the same dungeon reveal, how I'm looking at them is a little different than you, but it still works out really, really well. And I like how it always kind of, it's different every time. Like, we added more dice, and so, like, and as you get more to, like, rows 3 and 4, we threw in a little corridor die and a big boss die, too.
Yeah, so it's real cool. Ross, when's it going to be available?
So we're going to have this game later this year, probably in August. So hopefully for our fun reveal around Gen Con time.
Awesome.
And you can always find out more on our website and do all that. And we're really excited for Dungeon Academy.
All right, super cool. Thanks so much
Thank
for your
you.
Time. Nathan from Pegasus Spiel, and he's going to tell us all about their new series of games called Undo.
Yep, these are intended to be one-time plays, and here you are time travelers. There is an incident at some point in time that you want to undo. You've been tasked with this. You're going to sort of quantum leap backwards in time, deeper and deeper. You can choose randomly different points of time, and each one of them will have different effects. You're going to choose them, and you can do like an A, B, or C type of situation. Each one will have a different effect. You will affect it positively, negatively, or maybe not. Have no effect whatsoever. At the end of the game, you tally all the score together, and that will tell you a new story to tell you whether you were able to prevent this incident, this terrible incident, whether there was a murder, crime, suicide, a natural disaster, to prevent this incident from happening. You'll effectively undo it. But it is a cooperative game. Everybody's going to work together as a team, and honestly, it's going to be a lot of fun. They believe in it so much. They've got more coming out soon. There's three of available now, and there'll be more available at Gen Con. Keep watching. They believe in this one. They're going really deep on this title.
It seems really cool. So in each box, in each deck, you start with the most recent event.
Yes.
And then you're going to kind of work your way backwards from there.
It doesn't have to go sequentially backwards. You can leapfrog through time. Like when it's all just laid out in front of you, you can go 500 years in the past or 2 days in the past. It doesn't matter. You can go at any point.
That's really cool. And each card gives you three choices at the end, sort of choose your own adventure. And that's when you find out what effect that particular choice had.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, this ties into one of our other games we have called Adventure Island that plays, it's a cooperative game that plays like a choose your own adventure board game. But it's a co-op that is also a legacy with replayability built into it. These, however, are intended to be one-time plays. You might be able to get multiple plays out of it. For me personally, I like to play it one time and then streamline it for everybody else just to make sure that it flows really evenly and just sort of be the game master.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, especially for one-play games.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time, Nathan.
Absolutely.
It was great talking to you.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
I'm here on the last day of Origins with Chuck, who is demoing games for Asmodee and Plaid Hat, and he was just showing me how to play Quirky Circuits. So, Chuck, this game looks really cute, reminds me a little bit of Robot Turtles, but is significantly more challenging. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, definitely. So this here is a co-op, and what we're trying to do is get this little Gizmo the Cat robot, who's basically a Roomba, to pick up all the dust bunnies in this room. If he hits any walls, that's gonna mess him up and he's gonna turn to the left and The trick is the back of the cards only tell you if it's going to move straight, backwards, or forwards, or if it's going to turn. So you have no idea what your partners are going to do. So everybody here, let's say three players, everybody will have a hand of four cards. And everyone will have to play down at least one card each round, and a total of five as a group minimum. You can play as many as you want, but you have to play at least five. So there's no turn order. You're all just going to look each other in the eye, and whenever you feel ready and think it's the right move, you'll play down a card in a line. Everyone continues to play cards until everyone's satisfied, and then you can just put your cards down to let everyone know. Then the fun comes, you start flipping over those cards, and you see what happens. The robot could go one forward, two forward, three. He could go backward, left, right, turn, 180-degree turn. You execute the cards, and then each round, you have a limit of seven battery. Each round, the battery's going to go down one notch, and you have to clear up all the dust bunnies in the room and get back to your starting place before you run out of battery. There's a whole bucket load of different scenarios you can do with four different robots that all interact different. Some pick stuff up, so there's a little pick up and deliver. There's clearing stuff out of the way. And it's just a bunch of crazy fun where you can't really communicate and you just kind of read each other's minds.
Yeah, I thought it was really neat. I expected it to be, you know, action programming, which it is, but I didn't expect the cooperative aspect where you're all programming sort of the same action stack, but you don't really know exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like this other, not cooperative, but programming stuff like Robo Rally, where when you get stuck in the tough situation, you're like kind of all there by yourself, a little miserable. Here, you know, when you're messing up as a group. So that's a little more fun.
Well, that was great. I looked through the book quickly, and there's all kinds of different scenarios. I love the way it's set up so that it's this big spiral-bound notebook, and you just flip to whatever scenario you're going to be on, and the left page tells you the setup, what robot you're using, what your goal is, you know, what you need to watch out for, and the right side is your map that you're moving on and your battery power for that scenario. So it all plays right in the book. So it's just the book, a tile to remind you how your robot moves, and a big hand of cards.
That is an excellent summary. Thanks for letting me show it to you.
Thanks so much, Chuck. Thanks for talking to me.
Yep.
Stephen Bonacore, the president of Stronghold Games, and this seems to be the year of the Roll and Write. So
oh, yeah.
Tell us about two of the newest ones you guys have out, Bricks and Second Chance.
Right. So Bricks is the third game by Wolfgang Warsch, who has been doing these incredible Roll and Writes and very successful. He did Ganz Schön Clever, which we have in our catalog, and now Twice as Clever, which we had here and sold out, and now Bricks. Bricks is Tetris the Roll and Write. You are going to be.
I love it already.
Yeah, I mean it's just so cool. So it in the style of your sheet of paper looks like the arcade game from like the 70s, whenever that was
awesome.
Out there,
yep.
Or 80s. It looks so cool.
It just won't play the Russian music for you.
Will not play any weird Russian music. That's exactly right. So you roll two dice, a four-sided and a six-sided die, and that's going to tell you which one of those pieces that you're going to have to now drop in air quotes, like sort of from the top of your sheet down, so that it falls, and then you cross out those boxes.
Okay.
You're trying to cross out all 10 boxes across to score the most points on each one of the levels. And there's about 20 levels, just like in the Tetris. Now, they don't explode off your paper, of course. You can't do that. But you're going to be making these X's, trying to get completely across all 10 X's. If you score the most points that way, if you get one less, you score a little less points. One more less, a little less points. You can shift the blocks like you can in Tetris.
So you can rotate them, right?
You can rotate them with energy points. So you start with a certain amount of energy points, and you can, when you're about to select the piece, you can, using energy, move to a different line to therefore take a different piece. It's not an infinite amount of motion. You have a chance to move it a little bit, basically. There's other ways of gaining energy, and there's other ways of using energy. Like, for instance, if you don't like that piece at all, you can spend a lot of energy to basically pick any piece that you want to move down.
Okay.
So It's all about trying to score the most points, trying to complete everything together. You can even play the game solo because it'll be a puzzle for you to just to create and try to get the most kind of points solo.
I love that.
It's just a really great experience. I mean, once you buy into this whole roll and write idea, you get the next one and the next one because the experiences are so different, each one of them.
Yeah.
And then with Second Chance, it's technically not a roll and write, it's a flip and write.
Sure.
So in Second Chance, you are trying to complete a piece of paper that you have in front of you. It's like a graph paper. It's a grid.
Yep.
I think it's about 10 by 10 grid. Everyone starts with a different shape in the middle so that you're not doing exactly the same thing. Two cards are then presented to everyone. Everybody can pick any one of those two cards, and then you write that onto your sheet. As you get closer and closer to the end, you might not be able to write one of those two shapes. You then get a second chance. One goes right to you and you alone. If you can still write, if you can write that one down, you stay in the game. If you can't, you're out. Everyone will go out within one round of each other. This game plays in 10 to 15 minutes. You can play it with kids. You can play it with grandmother. It's so simple, so easy. And some people get really creative. And as they're putting the shapes onto their piece of paper, they make certain kind of like drawings. Like they'll put flowers. They'll put smiley faces and all kinds of things like that. So it can also be really kind of cool as you see the people's little drawings that they're making there. So that's Second Chance by Uwe Rosenberg, another great designer.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much, Stephen. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Anitra. Appreciate it.